SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
We welcome you to hour number two live right here on this Friday morning on the early line on Sports Grid. He is Donnie Wrightside. I am Ben Stevens. Two more hours to go up until 11 a.m. Eastern time. Plenty of hot topics to be discussed here in this second hour. In our next segment, the coach, J.Y. James Young, will join us to recap what he saw last night in Madison Square Garden. The New York Knicks staving off elimination on the brink of their season coming to a close in Game 5 to extend the Eastern Conference Finals. How did New York do it? What does it mean for Game 6 tomorrow night back in Indianapolis? And his thoughts early on Oklahoma City being those NBA championship favorites as well. Chris Meaney of the NHL will be here later in hour number two. The Stanley Cup final is set. It's a rematch of a season ago between the Panthers and the Oilers. Will we see the same result with Florida hoisting the cup a season ago? And some hot topics, DRS, tailor-made for you, my friend, to start off this second hour. Yeah.
We love the hot topics here. But by the way, when we talk about like courtside seats at these games, right, superstars sitting in them, like, do they get a discount from the franchise? Because you can't just go on like, Dick Picks and be like, hey, you know what, give me cash here and I'll give you these seats. If they're not available.
I've really sincerely and genuinely wondered that, right? When you see Timothy Chalamet and Spike Lee and Ben Stiller, are they paying a reduced fare? You would think if anybody did not need cheap seats or comped seats, it would be these celebrities that make so much effing money. But then again, DRS, is part of the glamour for Madison Square Garden and the world's most famous arena, having these incredibly famous people sitting courtside, and thus you pay for the expenses of doing so. Because of the exposure and the conversation, you let go of the ticket value. I have very much wondered that. Maybe I'll ask a couple of questions tomorrow to people I know in the know about that very statement.
Yeah, it's got to be not comp tickets, because there's still a business.
You don't think it's completely free?
I could get 30 grand for those two seats you're sitting in. I'm just going to give it to you because you're a superstar, because it looks good on TV. Now, if that comes from the NBA, like, hey, we'll pay the freight, just put superstars down there and we'll reimburse you, that's not happening there. But there has to be some sort of like, all right, you make a lot of money, we're not just giving these away, this is a good partnership, you're a superstar, you sit there, we'll give you 50% off those seats, which still would be like $20,000. But I doubt that they're handing those tickets away to be free at that point. I don't care how big the star actually is.
Yeah, I would doubt they are completely free 99 as well. I wonder what that discounted rate is. And then that's a lot of money.
Like Spike Lee's always paid, though, hasn't he? Like, I wonder what his season, because he's always had season tickets. He's there every single game, it feels like. Which, again, like, Chalamet's like, hey, I'm going to go to all 41 Knicks home games. Like, no, he's showing up for the big games, which means those are reserved tickets. And also, what's the hierarchy? Because how many stars are calling the Knicks going like, I would love to get into the building there, and like, we don't have them available. And those stars, like, let's just say like Denzel's in town. I want to go, like,
for sure,
buddy, you're in the third row tonight because we got bigger superstars than you. Do you know what I mean? Like, how's that like hit a athlete, or let's just say a superstar entertainer that's like, I would love to go to this game. Like, we can get you in the sixth row. Like, oh, that's a tough look, man. Who's ahead of me? Let me know.
Oh, a little bit of reporting from our producer extraordinaire, courtesy of the New York Post, in a statement that reads, firstly, the seats can't just be bought. Celebrity Row is invite only.
Yes, correct.
A source close to the Garden told the Post, celebrities are chosen, quote, based on their broad approval and level of popularity, end quote, that resonates with the Knicks fan base. Once someone is chosen, they have to pay for their spot, but sources said prices are comparable to ordinary tickets in the area. Ordinary tickets, though, within the first three rows, to Donnie's point, for a game five with New York season on the brink, is still probably $5K, right? At bare minimum.
More than that. Yeah, more than that at that point. Like, what? Like, because I don't know what the prices would be, but Eastern Conference Finals courtside, Knicks game, like, I'm talking face value, like what they would just charge you. It's got to be 15 or 20,000, though. Has to be. I would think it's that high.
I would certainly think so. And I'm sure there's some kind of structure, not just coming out completely of the celebrity's bank account. I guess we'll never know, but we'll enjoy the festivities as we get it. Will Chalamet and Stiller make the trip back to Indy after the warm welcome from Pat McAfee, formerly of the Sports Group.
I mean, aren't they
that would have been pretty cool, man. You know, if we could have said our colleague Pat McAfee sits courtside for an Eastern Conference Finals game, what could have been?
Now, hold on, hear me out on this one. Here's a better question. Yeah. The Sports Grid Network talent on air picks up the phone and calls the Garden. Who's getting shunned and who's getting the red carpet out there? Like, no doubt, like for me, I'm courtside. And I'm going to look up there at Ben Stevens on the Chase Bridge, no doubt about it. Is that the hierarchy?
I'm sitting higher than the TNT crew last night. Yo! I'm waving down for them. Yeah. Now, you just got to wonder, where do the Sports Grid Network, where does the talent of the Sports Grid Network, in what arena can we sit courtside? Do you think we are invited? We have enough prestige to sit.
Sacramento.
You heard it here
Sacramento
first, Doug.
Courtside.
You are our guy. Yep. We're bringing back the Kings, brother. I love that. Man, that
like
would be
Jerry
good.
Glanville used to leave two seats for Elvis. Like Christie's going to leave two seats for the boys who are on the early line each and every game, hoping they show up. Like every game, like tell us the story about why these two courtside seats are never filled. I leave them for the guys on the early line, man. Whenever they want to show up, it's always there for them. Just come up the will call and you got them.
Absolutely so. Never forget our credo in life. Everything is fun until the rabbit's got the gun. That's what Doug Christie told us, and that's what we believe first and foremost. All right, DRS, what a great start to this second hour. Let's keep it rolling. Yep. Yesterday in Orlando at Big 12 spring meetings, we've seen a lot of news and notes from these spring meetings around various conferences in the last few weeks, a lot about scheduling and college football playoff. But this from NCAA President Charlie Baker, who called expanding the NCAA tournament in basketball one of his top priorities. Here is the report from David Rumsey of Front Office Sports, another very reputable sports media network. NCAA President Charlie Baker said one of his top priorities here at the Big 12 spring meetings was to discuss expanding March Madness, which could come as early as 2026. Quote, that would be the goal, to try and do this for next year. We've been talking about 72 and 76. That would be the amount of teams that now qualify for the big dance.
I don't mind it. And I'm usually a hater of many things that people come up with, but I just look at basketball games that matter, football games that matter, and more of them is always a good thing. We're handicappers, we're content people, and adding more games to the NCAA tournament. Like, hey, you got an extra game in the 12 o'clock spot here. Like, nobody's going to argue that we don't like that. Sometimes we just like tradition, and the field of 64 has always made some sense. Then we okayed it for the first round, you know, in the first four in Dayton, which, you know me, Ben, like, I don't even like the first four games in Dayton.
You don't.
Like, I just want to get to the meat and potatoes of it in those games, but meaningful games so you can talk about it and watch, because maybe we're not talking about having, you know, low grade first four teams, but I don't mind when like the 11 or 12 seeds are the UCLA brand, where it's like, okay, I'm going to tune in and find something I like. Like, I don't like when the SWAC teams come in and they score 48 points and can't make any shots and they're just overpowered, or the game is 52-52 with, you know, 1 minute to go. Like, I don't want that. But if you're giving us higher brand teams that we can recognize, there's no fault in that for me. Like, there's so many things I would do in college basketball outside of that. Like, hey, look, we're not going to have any buy-in games anymore. They're all gone. That November and December slate, that's gone. Game number one, you start in conference. Let's hit the ground running. But I don't mind an extra couple games. It doesn't ruin the experience for anybody and just gives you more things to watch.
For me, it completely diminishes the value because, unlike DRS, I do not believe that it would add to the NCAA tournament. And those games would be play-in type games, first four action in Dayton, Ohio, not between the teams that are really deserving, but teams a game or two above 500 from a high major league that barely qualified for the bubble. They were not good throughout 30 games in a regular season, and we are going to reward that incompetence or mediocrity to get a spot in the NCAA tournament. I do hear DRS's point about trying to make these games seem more significant. However, for me, it would do the opposite. Diminish those significance of the regular season games in Donnie's favorite time of the year.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
A Friday Live right here on the early line, where we were slightly worried we might not have any playoff games to break down in the association until June 5th. The New York Knicks had other ideas. They stare into the eye of elimination and say, not today. The New York Knicks winning by 17 in game number 5, staving off elimination and extending the Eastern Conference Finals for at least one more night on a Saturday in Indianapolis. To break it all down and give his early thoughts on game 6 as well, the coach, J.Y. James Young, is here bright and early on this Friday morning. J.Y., as always, we appreciate the time. Thanks for being here on TEL.
Well, it's great to be on you today, not talking about a Knicks funeral, but a game 6. Some adjustments we need to get into what New York did last night.
Yes, certainly so, J.Y., and that's where we start. The first game of any of our 5 in the Eastern Conference Finals. A team is won by double digits. The New York Knicks do so comfortably inside the Mecca last night. 111-94. 17-point win. The Knicks cover as a 4.5-point favorite, and a total of 222 stays well under. So you talked about what New York did well last night. What did the Knicks flip in game number 5?
Well, let's look at one thing offensively and one thing defensively. Obviously, you're going to talk about the play of Jalen Brunson to start the game, but I thought it was smart of Tom Thibodeau to not always have him bring the ball up the court, Ben. Get him on the move where Indiana could not load up his defense. Hand off, stuff like that. And I think people need to recognize Aaron Naismith is compromised. You saw Jalen Brunson particularly try to go to his right early, kind of, and now Naismith push off that right foot, which makes it difficult. So Jalen Brunson going to his right, getting him on the move was key. The second thing is, I thought I wanted OG to go on Halliburton, but Tibbs did something smart. He kept Bridges on him, but they picked him up in the backcourt. They made him turn one or two times, defensively. Now, if you get a guy to turn one or two times, Ben, that could be a difference of 2 to 3 seconds on the shot clock. Now you're starting your offense a little bit later than accustomed, and then you get to a point where if you keep pushing him out, Halliburton isn't the one that stifles like quick enough to go to the basket and just blow by people if you pick him up in the backcourt. That was key. Third thing is, the Knicks did not allow them to get into transition. The Knicks were opportunistic when they ran, but they more went into what I call like a secondary break, which is more of like a sideline break, a little bit less speed, which still gets to the shot clock early, but doesn't rush them. Those three things were huge changes made by Tibbs, and it paid off for the Knicks last night.
Loved the Knicks yesterday, Coach. Loved them to cover the spread. I thought they were in a great spot, and as you said, came out on fire, but sort of let that lead leak away at the end of the first quarter, but they didn't miss a beat, won the second quarter by 7 points. If we look at that starting lineup for the Pacers, because we've always said how deep the Pacers are and how good that starting five plays together. 15 points out of Siakam was the best of the bunch here. 3, 5, 6, 8 points respectively throughout the rest of the starters. Is this something that can continue with the Knicks' defensive pressure, or is it one of those where we had a video here coming up of Tyrese Halliburton that said, you know what? They were just better in this game. They were more intense. Their defensive intensity was really ratcheted up. Can the Knicks turn that over to a game 6 and a game 7? Or was this just an anomaly, you think?
Well, listen, at the end of the day, can they just literally not turn the ball over? That's the key with the Knicks. Because Indiana, they live in transition, right? They got to get up and down. And I think that's the key, is if they can get up and down, they're able to do so. They forced 20 turnovers, the Knicks only 15. And they're also, Donnie, there's different kinds of turnovers, live versus dead ball. A live ball turnover, you get a fast break, you go, right? And that's what Indiana wants. They want live turnovers, block shots, obviously runouts. Same thing with steals. When you score and you milk the clock a little bit, you force them to play half-court ball. The other thing is this, there's a term that we talk about, we call jam the outlet. Meaning, even on mix, Indiana likes to get that ball out and get up the floor. If you pick up Halliburton at half court or three quarter court, now we can't get it on the move and get up the floor. It's a lot to do with flow, and the Knicks disrupted their flow last night. We'll see if it can happen, but Indiana, that was not a great performance, but you have to give the Knicks credit defensively.
J.Y., that's one of the things I noticed first. As soon as there was even a made basket, which is one of the things the Pacers do better than anybody in basketball, even after a make, they can get into transition very quickly. There was somebody for New York basically there on the inbounder as soon as that ball went through the hoop. Tyrese Halliburton, after a historic performance in game number 4 in Indy, last night in game 5, only 8 points. He took it on the chin, said the performance was on him. Expect some more resolve from Indiana in game number 6 tomorrow. We'll talk about game 6 in just a matter of moments. But of course, JY, if your season is on the brink, you need your superstars to shine. Jalen Brunson, 32 points. Carl Anthony Towns, a 24-point, 13-rebound performance in game number 5. How was this dynamic duo so dominant last night against Indiana?
Well, number one, the fact that they got Brunson off to a good start. You know, I think it was 6 of 9 from the floor the first quarter. And he got into all of his bag, Ben, right? Getting to the basket, bump off when he gets into the lane. If he gets a switch, walk up three where you just kind of lull the defender to sleep and shoot the three. But the key thing that I've talked about on this show and on any show on Sports Grid is that we needed Tibbs to stagger the minutes. You're now seeing Cat with four defenders, mainly bench guys, Hart, McBride, Shamet has been really good, DeLon Wright, even Precious at times. Put four other guys that are decent defenders, spread the floor, and let Cat get into his bag. It's kind of like a 1A, 1B offensively. So now you start both of them, and we'll see where we can go from there. But what a start in the first quarter, Ben. But then they started to get Cat going, and then those two kind of traded off, and Indiana never had an answer last night.
Coach, series prices here starting to change as well. You take a look at the Indiana Pacers, where that really heavy favorite yesterday, still a heavy favorite today because game 6 is on their home court at a -370 price, but the New York Knicks now under $3 as an underdog at +295. Looking forward at these price points, maybe biting on the Knicks yet, or it's still wait and see, and you'll hold off until they can maybe force a game number 7.
You know, listen, it's about the fact that the spread is 3.5 in game number 6. That's telling you this is almost a pick 'em right now if you bake 2.5 for the home team. We'll see what happens. We'll talk more about it after this commercial break.
Yeah, we'll talk about game number 6 tomorrow night in Indianapolis. Will the Pacers clinch a spot in the NBA Finals, or will the Knicks send us back to Madison Square Garden for a winner-take-all game 7? Good stuff. I'm back.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
So the Eastern Conference Finals has life. But just how much? That's for us to discuss here as we look forward to a Saturday night in downtown Indianapolis. It is game number 6 of the Eastern Conference Finals between the Pacers and the Knicks. JY, Indiana, a 3.5-point early favorite for game number 6, and a total now at 218 for the over-under on the FanDuel Sportsbook. Game 6, the Pacers with an outright win advance to the NBA Finals with an outright victory for New York on the road as an underdog, forcing a Game 7 back inside the world's most famous arena. JY, the Knicks stave off elimination last night, but tell us for tomorrow night what happens in game number 6.
Well, that total coming down to 217.5 tells you what it's going to be. And they expect the Knicks to kind of rinse and repeat their form of trying to make this a half-court game. And I think that's what you're going to see. They're going to dare Indiana to win the game in the half court. Now, the key is going to be watching, obviously, the turnover, especially live ball turnovers by the Knicks, especially someone like Josh Hart, who was really, really bad in game 4, much better in game 5. Do the Knicks fall into the trap? It's very simple, folks. If you think this game is going over, then you're probably going with Indiana. If you think it's going under, you're going with the Knicks. It's just the recipe of two contrasting styles. The interesting thing to look at, guys, is first quarter points. Jalen Brunson was in his absolute bag last night. His over-under for the first quarter, I think, is at 8.5 points. But I'm going to go the other way. I'm going to go Cat. It's only 4.5 points, and it's at +126. He will get off to a slow start because I'll let Brunson get going early. I think Cat has found something when he starts to drive the ball and you spread the floor. He should be able to get an open three pretty quickly. Carl Anthony Towns over 4.5 points in the first quarter at +126 on FanDuel right now.
Yeah, if I'm looking at game number six, too, forget it from a side perspective. I do think the Pacers win this game, same way I thought the New York Knicks would win in game number five. But the under does make some sense, not because we don't know what the pace of play is going to be, but referees usually understand the assignment late in the series. Let the players figure this one out. Now, granted, you're not going to get away with nonsense fouls, but the ticky-tack fouls and the hand checks up at the top of the key, they'll let those go through, which makes it a little bit harder to score, which brings me to my next point here, Coach. Jalen Brunson, 31.5 points as his total. He got 32 in game number five. Again, he had some performances in the first quarter, Coach, which I thought he was going 40-plus, 50-plus points here. Cooled down the second quarter, heated back up in the third. He took a look at Tyrese Halliburton, who had a terrible game, per se, in game number five. 20.5 points here. How are you playing the big guys here at the point guard position for both of these teams?
Well, listen, for Indiana, for them, for Halliburton, it's got to be about the assists more than the points. If I'm Indiana, though, I'm saying that I can't let Brunson get off early. That's why you look at someone like Cat to play better. Also, look at the fact that OG Anunoby did not shoot the ball well. I think 2 of 10 from the floor last night. Maybe he gives you a better performance. Here's the thing. If they are going to let you play, Donnie, and you're right, they're probably going to stay out of it. This benefits New York because they're going to be able to play more physical like they did last game. So to me, it comes down to this. Does Indiana match the intensity? What do they do with handles with Brunson? Do they blow it up by sending two people? If you're Indiana, get the ball out of Brunson's hands and make other people beat you. If you're in New York, if you let Tyrese Halliburton go off, but he can't get other people going because there's not a lot of guys that can create their shot, maybe Pascal, that's a recipe. But if you're talking about half-court basketball, physical basketball, that's going to benefit the Knicks.
Jalen Brunson, a game-high 32 points last night, his 10th performance in this postseason with at least 30, the most for a single New York Knick in a single postseason in NBA playoff history. As we look at the supporting staff, JY, you mentioned OG Anunoby. Carl Anthony Towns, two consecutive games north of this points prop at 22.5. And Pascal Siakam, the only guy in the starting five for Indiana last night, reaching double figures, he had 15. Of the six guys on that list, whose performance in game six is most important to the outcome tomorrow night?
It's Carl Anthony Towns. Because I hate to say this about a guy in the playoffs. Ben, when he decides to play, and he decides to take the ball to the basket and play more inside out and have the ability to drive, it opens up his three-point shot. When he drives to the basket, Siakam can't stop him. He's too small. Turner can't stop him. Not physical enough. And there's no one on the bench can do it. Here's the thing. Can the Knicks win with Brunson going under 30 points? Yes. Can they win with Carl Anthony Towns getting under 20 points? The answer is no.
Ooh, a very good assessment there, J.Y., and a great breakdown early on this Friday for tomorrow night, game number six in Indianapolis. Pacers an early 3.5-point home favorite, needing just one win to get back to the NBA Finals for the first time in 25 years, where the Oklahoma City Thunder await. More on that next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Tomorrow night, game number six in Indianapolis between the Pacers and the Knicks. How many more games do we have in the Eastern Conference Finals? Well, the NBA Finals start on June 5th, and the team we know already there in the championship set, the Oklahoma City Thunder. JY still with us here on this Friday morning on the Early Line on Sports Grid. JY, you were not with us after OKC clinched a Western Conference championship in only a fifth game a few nights ago at home, winning by 30 in game number five to pull off the gentleman's sweep against the Minnesota Timberwolves. OKC expected to reach this stage throughout the entirety of this NBA season. But JY, we had a few questions about this Thunder core, led by the now MVP in Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and head coach Mark Daigneault. Did they have the postseason pedigree? Had they learned from their experience to reach a place they had not since 2012? What did you make of how Oklahoma City reached the NBA Finals, doing so in only five games in the Western Conference Finals?
I'll be honest with you, Ben. They need to thank the Denver Nuggets because the Denver Nuggets pushed them. And they lost different ways. They lost a game one at home, right? They had a tight loss in game three. They had to come back after losing game six to win a game seven. But since that game seven, about 3 minutes left to go in the second quarter, they have been the Oklahoma City Thunder team that we've expected and seen all season, which is rely heavily on that highly ranked defense and then have enough offensive firepower to be offensively diverse, meaning I know SGA is the MVP. We have to crown him and maybe start to have this conversation of the talk of, is he arguably maybe the best player in the world, or how close is he to that number one spot? But it's been the evolution of Jalen Williams. It's been having Chet Holmgren for the entire season. It's getting Isaiah Hartenstein from the New York Knicks to give them that leadership, that toughness in the paint. It's Alex Caruso, who literally, I should just call him the prison warden, because he just puts whoever he guards, he puts that kid in jail. But it's the bench. And it's been a slow buildup by Sam Presti, and now looks like I don't even know if I'm even on right now because I can't see anything.
You are. Maybe just refresh right real quick.
Give me a free shot.
No, there you go. No, don't refresh. Keep it right there. Use it. Now you go to the superstar right now, so I'm supposed to ask the question to Coach why he's frozen. Doesn't matter, yeah. Coach. Let's unfreeze this. Let me ask you this question, too, because you look at the Knicks game where if they force game number six, which they did, if they force game number seven, which we'll find out, the question to me is going to be, Coach, is if we get them, talking about the Knicks, only a 2 or 3 game distance to the finals, but then you have, let's just say, OKC all for a long time. Is that good for them? Usually when you're a team and you're hot and you're playing well, you don't want to sit out for a full week. How does that affect OKC heading into the finals, where they're going to be a team that's going to be really rested, especially if we see 7 games in the East?
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it here, if it goes seven, what I may do, guys, to be honest with you, is I may take Indiana and New York in the first half to be in the lead. Right now, FanDuel only has odds for game one for Indiana, Oklahoma City, because of the fact that Indiana's up 3-2. And right now, it looks like it's a -9 with a favorite. So, you know, I'm going to probably take the Knicks or the Pacers if it goes seven to win the first half and then play the game live. But here's the thing, though. If you, no matter who it is between New York and Indiana, and off to Oklahoma City, these are three teams that haven't been there. So what are the nerves going to be like, right?
Yeah.
How are the nerves going to be there? I think it affects both teams, but it may affect Oklahoma City a little bit more in regards to the fact that they would be the home team with the longer break. Maybe look at Indiana or New York plus the points, or even on the money line in the first half to try and jump game one, particularly if the Knicks and Pacers go to Monday night for a game seven.
And it did not matter if the series in the Eastern Conference came to a close last night in MSG. It does not matter if it ends tomorrow night on a Saturday in Indy. Game number one of the NBA Finals is set in stone. It is Thursday, June 5th. If we go back to Oklahoma City all year long, JY, the best regular season record, 68-14. 12 playoff victories and only 16 postseason games. Oklahoma City, JY, one of four teams in NBA playoff history with at least 80 wins before the NBA Finals gets underway. And yet, I think there is maybe a prevailing sentiment that, yeah, Oklahoma City is really good, but not the most fearsome NBA championship contender we have ever seen. Where do you put the Thunder in terms of the great teams in the NBA that we have been witness to in the last decade or so?
Listen, I may be in the minority. I put them right up there. I just think they're so good and they're so young. They're so balanced and they can beat you in different ways. They can beat you running up the floor. They can beat you walking up the floor. They can beat you in an offensive game. They can beat you in a defensive game. They can beat you any way they want. Here's the issue, Ben. It's two words, Oklahoma City. If they were in New York, if they were in Boston, if they were in LA, if they were in Miami, if they were in Dallas, they would be getting far more respect than what they are getting because of their location. It's also the fact they have not been there yet, but they are so good. And here's the thing. I was kind of thinking about this morning when I got up early and I rewatched the Knicks game last night. The only chance that you can beat Oklahoma City is you got to out-tough them. You got to question their toughness, right? So if Indiana gets a yum, 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 I don't think it's going to work. The Knicks, how they played last night, if they get to the NBA Finals, that could be intriguing because they'll slow the game down and they'll be more physical and try to make the referees not make the foul calls. I don't think, even though Indiana plays that way, just because you play that way doesn't mean that's the best chance to win that way. Indiana, if they get to the finals, will have to adjust and be far more physical and far better defensively.
Let's take a look at that finals picture here at the FanDuel Sportsbook, which shows Oklahoma City Thunder to win it all, a minus 750 price, followed by the Pacers, of course. They have the lead series lead over the New York Knicks, looking to close it out in six games at a plus 700 price. And if the New York Knicks find their way into the finals with a three-game comeback here in 5, 6, and 7, they're a 16-1 price. If we look at the price points right now, obviously overwhelming favor because OKC, because they're already there. Talk to me about if there's any price points that you like between these three teams, and also, once we do settle on a finals, are we still looking at Oklahoma City that high of a favorite here, Coach?
They should be that high of a favorite because if it's the New York Knicks, let's look at the fact that they played them twice during the year and they blew their doors off. It wasn't even a contest. Yeah. So it does make sense for Oklahoma City to be a big favorite versus New York Indiana. Obviously, the Knicks line is going to move. If you want to jump on New York, you jump on them now if you think you're going to win a series because you're not going to get a better price. Even if they win game six, that's going to move a little bit more. Here's the thing. I honestly think the best way to do is wait for this thing out and play in a series spread and see what kind of spread you get it at because I think if it's New York, I think New York can get it to six and lose in six. I don't think with the way the Pacers get it, I don't think it's going to be more than a five-game series.
Because Indiana is just one win away from the NBA Finals for the first time in 2.5 decades, the hypothetical NBA Finals matchup that we have in an exact series price for is OKC versus Indiana. It's minus 770, even greater than that number we showed you with the three teams remaining in the hunt for a Larry O'Brien trophy, minus 770 for the Thunder outright. The Pacers a plus 540 price in that series outright number, a series spread would be Oklahoma City laying 2.5 games at minus 120. What does that mean? The Thunder would have to win in at most 5 games to cover that series spread. It is very interesting, JY, to see what the odds are anticipating for the NBA championship matchup as of this moment. Of course, still a lot to figure out in the Eastern Conference Finals. We'll know a lot more come the end of tomorrow night in Indianapolis. The Pacers and the Knicks. Indiana, a 3.5-point favorite for game six, a total at 218. JY, a fadeaway to the break. We appreciate your time, as always, here on this Friday morning on the Early Line on Sports Grid. Are we getting that the Tyrese Halliburton shot?
Yep.
A couple of points.
What? Halley what?
He's stuck.
Like,
he looks
I'm
like a robot.
Jalen Brunson.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
A Stanley Cup final for 2025 is now set, and it's a Stanley Cup rematch from what we saw exactly a year ago to help us make sense of the conference finals coming to a close and what to look forward to in the cup final. The NHL's Chris Meaney joins us now live on this Friday morning on the Early Line on Sports Grid. Chris, as always, we appreciate the time, my man. Looking forward to breaking down what we saw last night in Dallas and, of course, the Stanley Cup final rematch between the Oilers and the Panthers.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Always exciting, of course, the Stanley Cup Finals and the NBA Finals, but to get a rematch, and it really has been the two best teams in each conference, and the Edmonton Oilers and the Florida Panthers, so it should be highly entertaining, and last night was just another moment for Connor McDavid on the NHL resume.
Yeah, let's start with how the West was won by Edmonton for a second consecutive year. The Oilers victorious on road ice in Big D, with a 6-3 victory in game number 5. Chris, in game number 1, the Lone Stars' victory in this series, they scored 5 unanswered goals in the third period. But in the 4 consecutive victories for Edmonton, a plus-14 goal differential, outscoring the Stars 19-5. What was the key for the Oilers to win the Western Conference crown once again?
I'll start with goaltending, which was really the biggest surprise for me in this series. And that's why I gave Dallas the edge and Jake Oettinger, who got pulled a short leash last night from Pete DeBoer, yanking him after two goals. But Stuart Skinner, you know, when he came in for an injured Calvin Pickard in the second round against the Vegas Golden Knights, you know, his game really turned around and he only allowed five goals in the final four games of the series. Dallas got nothing at 5-5 in this series, like absolutely nothing. And you look last night in a must-win situation at home with all the fans there, they had 14 shots at 5-5. They had four shots at 5-5 in the second period, and they had four shots in the third period at 5-5 as well. They got the early goal from Jason Robertson. He was the only guy that really showed up for the Stars in this series. So, yeah, I want to give some credit to the Edmonton Oilers. Connor McDavid did his thing, 9 points. He had that unreal breakaway goal. He's got 33 speed bursts of over 22 miles per hour, 19 more than the next closest guy in the Stanley Cup playoffs. He's a freak. Leon Draisaitl had 9 points, but also secondary scoring. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, 9 points. Corey Perry scored last night, two goals for the 40-year-old in the series. Kane, 4 points. Jeff Skinner steps in for an injured Zach Hyman. He scored a goal last night. So I look at the Dallas Stars players and I see the 5-5 play. The Stars had more scoring chances, high danger chances, shot attempts in the series, but Edmonton had 13 goals at 5-5, and the Stars only had five. Matt Duchene, one goal in 18 games in the playoffs. Mason Marchment, one goal in 18 games in the playoffs. So, yes, the big boys showed up for Edmonton. They got great goaltending from Skinner, but up and down their lineup, they just had more depth, and it really showed at 5-5.
You take a look here, Chris, on the seasonal statistics for Edmonton, like, and even the past couple of years, they're a fun brand of hockey. They play a lot of overs, and it's like, okay, if we get some good goaltending, maybe we can make a run of this thing. But as you take a look at the last two games against the Golden Knights, back-to-back shutouts, outside of game number one against the Stars, where they lost 6-3, 3-0, 6-1, 4-1, before giving up three goals last night. Is this something that we can anticipate moving forward, saying, you know what, if Edmonton gets really good defense and really good goaltending, along with that offense, boy, oh boy, it sounds like maybe we are bringing back a Stanley Cup to Canada finally.
Yeah, it certainly could happen. And again, I'll go to Stuart Skinner. He basically has to be perfect. I mean, we know what the Florida Panthers can bring to the table. This is the third straight season they'll be playing in the Stanley Cup Finals. The last time we chatted, I do believe I talked about having them in the finals one more time. And last year, you know, you look at the seven-game series, there were a couple games where there was some high-powered offensive attacks, especially from Edmonton. I look at games 4, 5, 6, and 7. The Oilers had 19 goals and only gave up 7. But the hit four of the seven games in the series. It was tight checking, and that's the same sort of deal Florida plays, a tight checking style of hockey of 5-5. They don't give up a whole lot. And when these two teams played last year, it was very, very similar. I mean, I was looking at it again this morning and I couldn't believe how similar it was between the two teams in terms of just 5-5 play, the shot attempts, the scoring chances, basically even. I think at 5-5, the Panthers had one more shot and two more high danger chances. So the goals were even at 5-5, 14 apiece. So I think it's going to be a tight checking series. Obviously, Donnie, there's a lot of offensive firepower on both sides, but both goalies are playing good. Bobrovsky's playing just as good as Skinner over the past couple of rounds. So I think, you know, there's some potential for high scoring games, but I do believe we'll see some tight checking. And that's something I took away as well from last night and the series, not so much against Vegas, but in particular against Dallas, because I thought that they were one of the deepest teams in the league and just so tight checking. You mentioned the goals against. It's Skinner and it's the style and brand that the Oilers are playing, because we're used to seeing them have to beat you by scoring 6 or 7 goals. And that's just not the case this time around. Mm.
A lot of similarities, of course, to last year's Cup Final when the Panthers won in 7 games and the Edmonton Oilers were even able to force that 7th game in what was a great Stanley Cup Final. We'll talk about the rematch. We'll fully preview the series in just a matter of moments. But Chris, of course, there are similarities. There are a ton of familiarities in this stage, including for the Florida Panthers, who are playing in the Stanley Cup Final for a third consecutive year as that reigning Cup champion. Within the organization, what has sparked this almost dynastic run for Florida?
I think Paul Maurice. All right. The Florida Panthers were kind of always knocking on the door. I mean, first of all, there's two things, really. There's Paul Maurice, who's been around in the league for a long time. I mean, he coached against Rod Brendamore, and he coached Rod Brendamore back in the day, right? So he's had a lot of experience as a head coach in the NHL. So, you know, when they made the coaching change and they brought him in after having a good season the year before, he kind of sparked them. And also the big trade with Jonathan Huberdeau, who had a career season for the Florida Panthers. They move Huberdeau and Mackenzie Weegar to Calgary for Matthew Tkachuk, right? And gives them, you know, an identity, a different identity. They always had a ton of skill and a ton of speed, but then they add Matthew Tkachuk, they add Sam Bennett a couple years ago. Now they have the sandpaper with the skill, with the speed, and Sergei Bobrovsky's who've won a couple Vezinas before this recent run from the Florida Panthers. So I think it just goes to management making those tough decisions, right? You see some teams like the Maple Leafs, we'll see what they do in the offseason. Do they make a big change and follow Florida's suit? And I think that's what we saw with the Panthers, and they're unstoppable at the moment.
A rematch in the Stanley Cup final. It's the Oilers and the Panthers once again, and it starts on Wednesday. Chris Meaney breaks down the series next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Just like last year, a Stanley Cup final rematch between the Florida Panthers and the Edmonton Oilers. But in 2024, it was Florida in Sunrise with home ice advantage. This time around, it's the Oilers that have home ice advantage, starting with game number one on Wednesday evening up in Edmonton. And Chris, it was really interesting yesterday with the hypothetical matchup that seemed likely to see the Cup final rematch between the Panthers and the Oilers. Florida, in the hypothetical odds, was a slight series outright favorite. Now that we have the actual reality of that Cup rematch, it is Edmonton with home ice advantage and ever so slight, and we're talking 7 cents at this moment, outright favorite to bring a Stanley Cup back to the great White North. So, Chris, that is basically my question for you. A Stanley Cup final rematch, will it follow suit to what we saw a season ago?
Yeah, and buckle up, because last year was highly entertaining. I know Florida took the first three games, but Edmonton pushed that series to seven. And I mentioned, you know, in the previous block, the goals were 14-14 at 5-5. The Panthers had the edge in shot attempts and scoring chances, but one more shot on net, two more high danger chances at 5-5. It was a very even series despite the way it started. And I think the Oilers learned something from that series as well, as, you know, as it got on a little bit longer and deeper. You know, games 4, 5, 6, and 7, 19 goals scored. They had an 8 spot in one of those games. McDavid had 11 points in 7 games. He had nothing in game 6 or 7, unfortunately, still went on to win the Conn Smythe as the MVP of the Stanley Cup playoffs. But I do believe I don't know if you guys think this is silly or not, but I'm a big believer in learning how to lose before you learn how to win. I look at 1982-83, Wayne Gretzky's first Stanley Cup appearance. He lost to the Islanders, who were on a run. What happened the following year? Gretzky and the Oilers beat the Islanders. How about Sidney Crosby in 2007-2008, his first Stanley Cup appearance with the Pittsburgh Penguins, lost to Detroit Red Wings the following year, beat the Detroit Red Wings. So I'm a big believer in learning how to lose before you learn how to win. You can go across other sports. The Eagles a couple of years later, a similar squad taking care of the Kansas City Chiefs. How about those Cavs and Warriors runs? I know that the Warriors had 3 of 4, but Cleveland got the second series and the rematch there before Kevin Durant joined Steph Curry and company. So I'm a big believer in learning how to lose before you learn how to win. I think this Oilers team went through a lot of adversity last year in the playoffs. There was some deep series this year, you know, losing the first two games to the LA Kings. They've been 12-2 since. They've had really no adversity through the past couple of rounds. It looks like they're kind of clicking here on all cylinders and getting the scoring depth that I talked about before. But it's not going to be easy, right? I mean, we have the Florida Panthers here. So I do believe this is a series that's going to go seven. Right now, I'm kind of feeling the Edmonton Oilers. And when you have Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl motivated as they are, I kind of like their chances. You see there, the short game 7 plus 165. I think that's a solid number.
This should be a great series here. And yes, if you put that into perspective, must lose before you win here. Ben has lost a lot at the Sports Grid Network until he teamed up with me, Chris. Now a lot of winning here on the horizon, which leads us to the Conn Smythe Trophy. Now me at the network, I probably win the Conn Smythe, being the best overall talent here at the network. Who do you think is going to win in the NHL finals here? McDavid plus 110 price, Sergei Bobrovsky plus 250. Anybody else down that leaderboard, or is it Connor McDavid there, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to give another name than Connor McDavid to just talk about how he won last year, you know, without the Oilers winning. And if you got in early, like your boy Ben there, maybe a W for him. You're loving it at the moment. Yep. But I still think that's a decent number. I mentioned the speed burst. You know, he's got 26 points. And you look at the series he just had, 9 points in five games. He has at least 2 points in nine games here in the Stanley Cup playoffs, seven games with fewer than two, and just two games with zero. It's just crazy to think about that he's got two games where he's been held off the score sheet, and yet he has nine games where he has had 2+ points. But I think I mentioned Leon Draisaitl to you guys last time, and I believe he was at 15-1. Why not? Like, he's got 25 points. He's just 1 point behind McDavid. We know what he's capable of here. He could get 5 to 7 goals in the Stanley Cup Finals, and then his number could be a heck of a lot shorter than what it is right now at plus 850. On the Florida side, I mean, Barkov does lead the Panthers in points. He's going to have a tough task to try to shut down Connor McDavid as one of the best defensive players in the league. I look at other guys on that list like Bobrovsky. I mentioned his game of late. He's 12-5, a 912 save percentage. He has 3 shutouts. He's a guy that could certainly, if he holds down this high-powered Edmonton offense, he's going to get some votes. And then Sam Bennett, I think, is a really good number at 38-1. He's right there among the leaders for the Florida Panthers. He plays that style where he can lay a few hits. He can maybe drop the gloves if it comes to that, and he can put the puck in the net. And, you know, you're really seeing some chemistry with Matthew Tkachuk and Carter Verhaeghe at the moment. So Sam Bennett is a long shot to keep an eye on.
Chris Meaney from the NHL joining us here on a Friday to break down the Stanley Cup final between the Oilers and the Panthers. Chris, have a wonderful weekend. Hour number 3 for us up next.